Today's episode of Rob as a Podcast is sponsored by CISO. Stop hunting around for great comedy. CISO is the streaming comedy service that provides comedy for comedy nerds. Get 1 month free of CISO.com with the promo code RHAP. That's 1 month free of streaming comedy on CISO with promo code RHAP. Hey, everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino, and we have got a very fun podcast for you here today. We're going to be catching up with some of the people you saw this season on the CBS reality series Hunted. It is going to be a case of the hunters and the hunted here on this podcast. First, we're going to hear with one of the teams that won the $250,000 prize on Hunted, evading the hunters for 28 consecutive days. We're going to be speaking with Lee Wilson and Hilmar Skagfield, the Wolves, here in part one of this podcast. And then we're going to be hearing from one of the people in the command center, Teresa Payton. She is a real life intelligence expert. She is the CEO of a company called Fortalis, which is a cybersecurity firm. She also served as chief information officer at the White House, overseeing IT for George W. Bush. So very exciting to talk to her about her experience going on as one of the people tracking down the fugitives on Hunted. Of course, all of our survivor coverage is still on. Going. If you don't want to miss any of our podcasts, you can subscribe to the podcast. robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. And of course, we always appreciate your honest reviews, but hey, 5 bars of Ri-Fi in the iTunes store never hurt. robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. All right. So let's get into my first interview. Here is my conversation with Lee and Hilmar. All right, everybody. I'm very excited to talk to these two guys that we watched all January and February as they successfully went on the run for 28 days. The escape room artists that won $250,000. Please welcome to the podcast Lee Wilson and Hilmar Skagfield. Guys, how you doing?
What's up, Rob? Doing good.
Doing well. Thank you.
I don't get like a howl or anything.
Man, I listen to that's my phone ringtone now.
Yeah. All right. Well, guys, congratulations. You were definitely big fan favorites on Hunted. And I thought it was a very fun show. We really didn't know what it was that we were getting involved with in terms of as viewers of the show. I don't know if you guys knew much more about it as contestants on the show. So how did you guys ultimately end up being people that were going to go on the run for 28 days on a reality show?
Yeah, so this is Lee. Yeah, the whole thing really caught us off guard. We didn't know that Hunted was a thing that existed in the world until I got an email out of nowhere that just simply said TV show in the subject line. And I thought to myself, this is very suspicious. I'll read this email, but I will not click any links because I would like to keep my kidneys. And I ended up doing a little bit of research and digging deeper into it. And realized that it was like a legit thing that CBS was doing. And so because of that, I decided, oh, this is my opportunity to fulfill all my childhood dreams of being chased across the country. Let's do that. I will agree to do this. And so I had some conversations with the CBS casting crew. And one of the first things that came up was like, okay, who do you know that you could do this with? And immediately I thought of Hilmar.
Your adopted man-child, of course.
he's always been my buddy who, when something crazy happens, I call him. So car breaks down in the middle of the night, you call Hilmar. You're going into labor with your first kid at 3 a.m, and you call Hilmar to let him know. And he drives through the night 9 hours from Florida just to be there with you. We just have a very special relationship. And then on top of that, he's brilliant and a chess player and a boxer and a Viking and has like all of the immaterial things that you need to run from the law.
And you guys are both together in the escape room business, or is that just you, Lee?
No, that's just me. Omar has actually only ever played one escape room before.
Yeah. That this is Hilmar. It was quite funny hearing the entire season the hunters be like, "Yeah, the escape room guys," and I was like, I've only played one escape room, and I've helped build one for Lee in Murfreesboro. But I was like, I don't really know this world well. And then suddenly you're like, oh, they have no idea who the hell I am. This is awesome. And so, yeah.
We have done our job here.
Yeah.
Good.
We did our job a little too well at times, apparently.
You were off the grid. That way there was nothing that they could track down on you.
No, not a single thing. It was pretty incredible. Even post-show through Twitter, it was just funny to see Dr. Max and other people make various comments around my identity and people just completely being wrong still. And you're like, did you not think to Google or, I don't know, look through the emails that I did have available for you? Like, he had my personality wrong. I mean, it was pretty epic. So, my background is in a myriad of things. I started out as a fashion designer for a company, Billy Reid. And then that really actually opened me up to kind of the South being my backyard. And then during the time that we were being cast, I was working for a tech company in actually data warehousing and a collaborative software. So I was really, really aware of how do you leverage data to create a profile and how do you use that to, really go after people. And so it was quite helpful on the run.
So is it fair to say that, Hilmar, that you were sort of the point person behind the idea to create the Gmail draft system to be able to get those out to people?
Yeah, I mean, how Lee and I operated on the run is very Danny Ocean and Rusty Ryan. I mean, to a T. I mean, basically, Lee called me middle of the night of, hey, do you want to run from the FBI? I was playing chess on my phone. I said, yes. And then from there, it was me being like, hey, I know a guy. And then he'd be, down to the, you think we need one more? All right, we need one more. And for me, it was on the show and through all this stuff was, okay, we have a problem. And then me thinking through like, okay, I know a guy in such and such place that could probably get us a ride from so-and-so to so-and-so. And then we burn that contact and tell him, not to tell any of the hunters anything. And so for me, it was just kind of being, being the person that could facilitate behind the scenes, Pilot Tim, who is more famous than Lee and I together.
You guys played the game with a real swagger that really none of the other teams attempted. Was that something that you guys were in lockstep on in terms of this is how we're going to do it? Or was there one of you saying like, hey, let's push the envelope further? And the other one was saying like, no, you're going to blow this amount of money that's coming into us.
Yeah. So this is Lee. We decided from the beginning that we were going to play a fearless game. We realized that the chances of us actually walking away with the money was very slim. And we could blow that by deciding to have lunch at Taco Bell, or we could blow that by flying in, my wife to find out if we were having a boy or a girl, and then also letting the hunters know that they were asleep at the wheel and not doing their job.
Yeah.
So we had to make choices. Every choice you made was a dangerous choice, and we committed from day one we were going to make really big choices because we thought it gave us the best chance of winning the game. So when we set up the Gmail account, for example, all of that was designed to gather intelligence on the hunters from our close friends who we knew the hunters would go and talk to first.
Yeah.
So we wanted to know what was going on with the hunters. How fast were they moving? What kind of questions were they asking? What was their names? What were their phone numbers so we could post it on Craigslist? I mean, we wanted to go big. We wanted to do some crazy stuff because we thought that the hunters would be confused by that. And frankly, we thought that they would be pissed off and not be able to do their job as well.
In terms of how the show works, I know a lot of the fans have questions, and I'm not sure, again, what you're able to tell us about sort of like the behind the scenes of the production. But we saw with the 9 different teams, okay, Lee and Hilmar are going on the run. But obviously, you know beforehand that you guys are going to be taking part in this game. You have some things that you're setting up beforehand. Can you take us through the process a little bit of like how much lead time did you have and what were some of the things you did to get ready?
Yeah, so that's a really interesting question. There's no pre-planning for the show. So there's a lot of people that said, you know, well, you know, I just bury a pile full of money in the middle of nowhere and go get it. Mm-hmm. And if you're a real fugitive that doesn't have, you know, that's not on a game and competing for money, that's a good, that is a good strategy. But there's no pre-planning. So it makes it so much more creative for you. The fact that you can't put into motion, you can't tell anybody what you're going to do. You can't do anything like that. And so that makes everything so much more fun because everything has to be on the fly.
What about talking to each other? Were you guys allowed to sort of have plans or sort of like not technically?
Yeah, this is Lee. So what we were able to do is come up with a strategy and then also identify certain resources that we could tap into. Mm-hmm. But we couldn't set up anything concrete. Mm-hmm. So we couldn't hide bags of supplies in the woods. We couldn't call ahead and say like, hey, we're definitively going to be at your house on this particular day and we need you to do this for us and we need you to have this list of resources available for us. We just had to identify essentially what are the game pieces that are on the board. That we could possibly use once the game begins. And other than that, like we couldn't really pull the trigger on any of those plans until they said, Lee Wilson, you're on the run. Hilmar Skagfield, you're on the run.
Yeah, we had to completely change. This is Hilmar. We had to completely change all of our plans basically within, 48 hours of, you know, the time frame. Everything that you see is us working off the fly and working with the resources that we knew we had. We came into the game with the strategy. Our first week was disappear, really cover our tracks, make sure that they couldn't get to us. Second week was getting down south. So you see us making a chain down there. Third week was Florida, where I have real deep, deep contacts. My dad's childhood friend kind of thing. And then the fourth week, which you see the plane as well as Craigslist, was our mystery week when we knew at that point in time we would have all these resources shut it down on us because the hunters would have taken away different things. They would have found different communities, interrogated different people. We didn't know what we would have by week four. And so we really stacked up as many, you know, of our big plays so that we could really overload them with information. And that's where you see, you know, Lee coming up with this great plan to do Craigslist and really bombard them with this onslaught of information that suddenly they're having to deal with on day 26, and they have 2 days to now catch us. And so that was quite fun.
Yeah, and this is Lee. That's the fascinating thing about this game is that we got to be season one. We were the guinea pigs. We got to play this game the very first time that it was played before people even really fully understood like what is the nature of the game. And what we discovered and what we realized is that this game is fundamentally about information. Mm-hmm. It's who has the best information, who can act on that information, and is it possible for you as a fugitive to control your information, but then also confuse the hunters about who you are and what you're doing. And that's why you see in the way that we played Hunted that in the beginning, we wanted them to have absolutely no access to any information whatsoever. So we deleted everything that we could delete. We cleared out Hilmar's apartment, except for his books and his art. And then towards the end of the game, you see that we flip the switch and go the other direction. And all of a sudden, we are flushing them with stuff that's bad information. All of those Craigslist phone calls, all of the stuff that's going on with the newspaper, hitting social media. And suddenly, the hunters who've had nothing to work with, have hundreds of phone calls coming in, all of these data points, and only a couple of days in which they have to suddenly account for all of that. Meanwhile, we're making our getaway to North Georgia to hit an airplane with $250,000. Thankfully, we didn't pass out, or I didn't pass out on the side of the road in the process.
Yeah. You weren't planning on a 3-mile sprint at the end of it.
Yeah.
Believe me, I would have been passed out well before you were, Lee. No.
I was just thankful to have a Viking to help me up the last hill to get to the airport.
Yeah. Oh, now, did you guys have any awareness of what was going on with any of the other teams or the hunters, or you didn't even know about any of that stuff until you watched the show?
Yes. So we this is Hilmar. We had no idea what was going on with the other teams, and that's also, you know, one of the things I really like about it. You're playing your game against the Hunters, and it's mano a mano with the Hunters, and that's it. And because there's so many factors that you have to calculate socially with just your own crew, that makes this game so much more fun and complex than we'd ever imagined. But yes, one of the best parts about it was, through this kind of developed information system that essentially Beth was able to be kind of our key resource in.
She was our spy.
Yeah, she was our spy.
She was spying on the Hunters.
Yeah, and so all these people would get information to her after a while, and then we had a you know, through the burner phones, a clear connection with her that we used just occasionally. And so we would get all these downloads from Beth of where the Hunters were. So we actually found out that they were they'd just gotten to Savannah 12 days after we had left that house. And so that was a really, you know, key
to talk
moment
to Topher.
Yeah, no, that was a little later, but yeah,
they're a little hot. They're a little hotter on our heels with Topher.
Yeah. But it's so we were able through that, like, there's to figure out who was getting interrogated, not in real time, but, you know, in a quick enough time to be able to calculate our moves based off of what they were investigating. So, you know, the fact that they went after Josh Whitson or other people, you know, allowed us to make moves that are like, okay, we can't go that direction. You know, so now what community or, you know, network are we going to jump into? So that was quite fun.
So in the beginning of the game, you guys left a bunch of, what was it, iPads for the Hunters? Do I have that right?
Yeah, we left our phones and basically all of our tablet devices in Hilmar's apartment.
Why?
So that was just part of, yeah, I mean, that was just part of our plan. Essentially, it was that information game where we wanted them to have access to our devices, but not have access to any of the information on the devices. Mm-hmm. So all of those, our phones, our iPads, were all completely cleared and reset. And what we were trying to do is just occupy man hours, but occupy man hours in such a way that nothing fruitful would come from that time that they spent. So like constantly we wanted them to feel like they were being antagonized by us and we were that thorn in their skin that they just couldn't get rid of. So they show up, there's a note. They have to sort through, what does that note say? Okay, these guys are obviously arrogant. They signed it the Wolves. What does that mean? Why are they calling themselves the Wolves? We wanted that question to always be in the back of their mind. Like, who are these guys? What are they doing? Why did they leave us a note? This is completely bizarre. They left us the technology, but the technology has nothing on it. After, you know, we spent hours trying to piece it back together, there's nothing there. We went through these books that are Hilmar's books. We know that he's got an eclectic collection, but we don't really know anything about him. He's got this art. He's got these photos. Like, who are these guys? We just wanted them to be pulling at their hair because we just flat out wanted them to fundamentally doubt themselves and their ability to chase us.
Yeah.
And this is Hilmar. And what's really important about this game, going back to the information, is the fact that we left that was quantifying what we knew the Hunters would know. Right. If you don't know what they know, then you have a problem. So Lee and I were constantly thinking through what is available to them through all the various sources, through, you know, our iClouds, through our emails, through all these things. And then you have to pivot off of the fact that what do they know about us and how do we change our profile, how we change our methodology to make sure that we're accounting for what they know about us. And that's a big part of this game to do it successfully, or at least how we did it, to quantify what the Hunters know about you and make decisions, you know, away from that.
And that's really, this is Lee, that's really a concept that comes from escape rooms.
Yeah.
Because if you play an escape room, somebody has prepared an adventure for you and has provided all of the information you need in order to like work your way through the adventure and ultimately escape. And so the data that's inside of that room are really the tools that an escape room creator uses to create a really fantastic time for you. But in this case, instead of creating a really fantastic time for the Hunters, we were trying to create a very confusing, frustrating, antagonizing experience of this hunted escape room that we prepared for them.
So one of the really exciting moments in the first half of the season happened when Griff was calling Beth, Lee's lovely wife, and they had an exchange. And then somehow there was a butt dial that was sent back to the hunters, something about slashing tires. I'm not sure if that ultimately was that an actual thing that was said?
I will say that we were not speaking in code when that phrase.
Okay. Came
up. And that was a 100% true, legitimate butt dial that took place at the hands of my wife's dexterous backside.
Okay. And the very sneaky Beth Wilson was talking about slashing the hunter's tires. Is that legal?
Well, I don't know if it's legal, but I mean, it is a game involving fugitives. So. But, and that's quintessential us. I mean, that is the Lost Wolves. Like, we were always trying to push the envelope and figure out.
Yeah, you guys were literally pushing envelopes through the mail system.
Yeah, yes. Stinking mail cover.
Yes, I'm never trusting them again.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is Hilmar. You know, the whole time, you know, which was hilarious, you know, you spent 28 days together. And so you got a lot of time together and you're just thinking through just everything that you can to lock these guys up. I mean, we're like, can we lure them into a house and lock them up? You know, can we demote, like, you know, to take out one of their cars? You know, we're just thinking through every single thing that we can to just really make them question what's about to happen, you know, and that was the big thing that we wanted them to be aware of. And Lee was definitely the main agent of thinking through, okay, how do we make sure that they're not thinking about the game, but they're thinking about themselves. They're nervous about how they're approaching this house and what's going to happen and, you know, and whatnot. And so, yeah, we just wanted to keep them, you know, off their game, as much as possible. And slashing tires was one of the ways in which we thought about that.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, a lot of people got excited about that as far as our friends go. A lot of knives.
Whoa. Lee, what was going through your head though when Beth calls you and says, okay, I got a call from the hunter, I may have butt dialed them, and that this is something they may, I don't know what they know.
I mean my initial reaction was, I don't even know what to say right now.
Right.
But I know whatever I say next is going to be on television.
That's true.
And this is going to be the way that I am framed as a husband, maybe for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
So choose your words very carefully, very carefully. And so that's why you just see me just kind of hanging, because I'm like, okay, this could get me caught. But more importantly, this could get me on the couch for a very long time.
Right. Right. I mean, it's the kind of thing that if it happened in real life with, like, oh, I may have butt dialed our landlord or your boss. This is for $250,000. This is like a major thing.
Well, that was not the first time that my wife has butt dialed me or somebody else. It's kind of a trick that she has. I don't know how she does it.
Yeah.
There's something, yeah. I think we need to get her phone upgraded.
Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe the hunters have compromised it and maybe that's a thing that's going on. Then the other, you know, really dramatic moment where I talked about you guys planned your own family visit. There's this decision where you guys decide you're going to fly Beth in on a private plane, and then you are going to have this meetup so Lee can find out the sex of the baby that you guys were expecting at that point in time. So, Hilmar, there was no reservation for you of like, hey, look, Lee, you know, I want to be a good guy here. I want to be a bro, but like, isn't this a little crazy?
Yeah. So, it was nutty, Rob. I mean, that was.
I would have said, I'm sorry, Lee. I mean, Hilmar is the greatest friend ever.
No, man. That was a wild, wild thing. But one thing that was was really important, you heard by one little soundbite, which was we need a morale boost. If you'll notice that a lot of teams get caught around the week two mark and the week three mark. Mm-hmm. And that we were feeling that. I mean, you are really, really, really tired. And what pulling off that stunt did for Lee and I was kept us very focused. I mean, to pull off, you know, my dad's a pilot, and I was aware of a lot of aeronautical laws going into this move. So I knew how to do it in a way that would not send off flags to the hunters. Now, again, I have no idea how they're tracking Beth. You know, there's all these other variables. But and then to execute it, you know, required us to make a very long drive and a lot of different other pieces. But one of the things that, you know, was really important was, you know, we're in week three and we are dead tired. I mean, our, you know, we have been running. We've been in all these different places. You're mentally exhausted. And that really helped us get through that week three moment where you're
The Taco Bell moment.
Your Taco Bell moment where you can easily make a mistake and get caught. And so that is one of the reasons why I had no reservations. I was like, well, this has been something that I've been thinking about all throughout the game. Let's do it. Let's put this card down and let's play this thing.
And this, there was a huge amount of thought and planning that went into that moment. It was not an impulse decision by any means. And they, one of the things that you notice is that there's a comment in the episode about the tracking system that is attached to the plane, right? You can log into a website and you can see where a plane is in any given moment. Well, we had submitted a flight plan that had that plane going down to South Florida. So if the hunters know about the airplane and they're following the airplane, they're aware at all, then they're dispatching hunters to go down farther south into Florida. And then all of a sudden the airplane diverts from its planned course because there's a pregnant woman on the plane that needs to go to the bathroom. And there's just no way to account for that.
Yeah.
So there are these things that are kind of like floated out there as vulnerabilities that we had actually already accounted for.
The decision to make the Instagram post once Beth reached you, how did that come up?
That was all Beth. Beth wanted to stick it back to the hunters when we met her, and we were like more than thrilled that she was ready to throw this blood pressure line back into the hunters'
back
face.
Griff. Yeah, is Beth there?
I'm here.
Okay.
Lovely Beth Wilson.
Yes, the lovely Beth Wilson that will slash your tires, apparently, if you get on her bad side.
Watch out.
Yeah. So, Beth, why did you think that this was a good call to piss off the hunters with an Instagram post?
It was Griff. Did you hear that interview with me?
He was such an arrogant prick.
Oh, he listens to the podcast. Don't get him mad at me.
He gave me the Griff crap.
Yeah, it turns out that he's a great guy, but he plays an asshole on TV.
Okay.
No, when we met at the airport, Lee and Hilmar specifically said, let's take a photo. And I had said, what if we get a paper that would show the day and the place? And so the boys kind of thought about it and they said, that's a great idea, but I need you to post it on this day at this exact time. And so they had a plan in works. And
which also happened to be the exact same time that all the Craigslist stuff was going down. Mm-hmm. So we had identified this particular 2-3 hour period where we wanted a lot of things to all drop simultaneously that would free us up to go north and get to the airport for the extraction.
Right. So in the finale, we learned a lot about the extraction as viewers. Did you guys know the whole deal with the extraction and the bank from the start of the game?
This is Hilmar. No, we did not.
Can you tell us at what point that you realized that there's other stuff we have to do at the end?
This is Lee. We had seen the British versions, and we knew that in the British versions there were extractions. So that was something that was always we were always aware was a possibility, but we did not know with absolute certainty until the very last week of our time on the run.
So that's interesting. Did watching the British version of the show inform you guys about what you needed to be doing?
It helped us to understand the nature of the game. It helped us to understand kind of what we could probably expect going into it. So we didn't get the full rules of the game until 48 hours before the game started. But just by paying attention to the way that the British version actually plays out, we were able to get a sense of things. And so I would say that that was definitely an advantage that we had. But I think that all of the other fugitives also had that exact same access to that show as well.
Yeah.
But did the other teams watch the show? Do you know from any communication with the other teams after the game?
I do not know. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if they did or not.
This is Hilmar. Yeah. I'm not sure if they did, though I know it was, I mean, readily available to mm-hmm. anyone that searched it out. The big thing that, you know, you're thinking through with that is how are they going to change the game? And one of the things that, you know, you see Lee and I not do on the show was go into the woods because we were terrified of canine units. And then we heard, we never knew if that was a real possibility. And on the show, I think Ri-Fi makes a comment like, should we get the canine units? I was like, oh my gosh. They could have done that. That is terrifying to be in the woods and a dog coming after you.
Right, right. So in the finale, then you guys have to then go log on a computer and then get to the bank and then do this final run with the money. So we saw how gassed you guys ended up, or at least I'll say you guys, to be fair.
Suit on, he's barely even sweating.
Yeah. Now, one of the questions that a lot of the listeners had, was this the real money? Can you guys comment on that?
I don't think that it's – I don't think we get in any trouble for saying that it was Hollywood money.
Hollywood money. Okay. So, because I was getting nervous when you guys were making it rain on that airplane.
Yeah, people out there in the Twitter sphere were terrified that there was like a $100 bill or $600 bills, you know, like stuck up underneath those chairs in the jet. But don't worry. That was all – funny money.
Were you guys worried that somebody who did not know that that was prop money would just like come over and like cold cock you guys and run off with the bags?
Yeah, we were in northern Georgia in the mountains. Anything could have happened. Like that was the scariest part of the entire experience.
Yeah.
This is Omar. We really thought through every single angle to figure out how to get around a lot of different things. And you know, we just came up with, okay, it's going to be a straight shot and it's going to be a sprint to the end. But yeah, there was a moment when I was actually looking for water, and all these
for me, people, water for me.
And, but it was like, as I was doing that, I have this huge bag of cash in my hand. I'm like, I don't think this is a good idea. So, I mean, it was pretty wild running around in broad daylight with that whole thing going on.
Yeah, I wonder how many 911 calls went in to the local
police department. Yeah. No, completely.
Because people were driving. I thought there were going to be car accidents. I mean, people were driving by us going the other direction, and I'm surprised that nobody swerved into a ditch.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I know you guys have to run again. That's you're no stranger to being on the run. But this was so much fun to get to chat with you guys a little bit about the season. Again, we really did enjoy watching you on the show, and the show was so much fun. Do you guys have anything that you guys want to let the listeners know about?
We're just excited to see what I mean. This has been the great adventure of our lives so far. We encountered Hunted as just this inexplicable thing that happened out of nowhere. And so we've just been running with it and enjoying it. And for my part, I mean, I absolutely loved being inside of the game, and it's been really difficult to be away from it. So, you know, hopefully things happen in the future. Maybe there's more
Hunted All-Stars. Would you go back?
Yeah. Absolutely, in a heartbeat.
Hunted International.
I honestly don't know if the hunters would allow us to come back.
Yeah. Oh, they're too scared.
Some of the hunters that weren't tasked to us have been talking big talk. So you know, I'd love to see if they can step into Team Alpha's position and do any better.
Yeah, Hilmar, do you want to address the rumors that you did not change your shirt for the entire 28 days of Hunted?
So, okay. All right. So backstory on that. That's a great question. I wore the Fox print shirt anytime that we had to do a big ask. So if I knew that we were about to have to do some razzle dazzle thing and I was going to have to smooth talk somebody, that was just, it became like this thing. So it's funny because essentially, you know, I'm in that shirt the entire season, you know, just like Flat Cap Charlie is in his little hat all season. So yeah,
it's under the hat. That's what I
was. Oh.
That's like, under the hat.
Yeah.
I think it's just a brain.
Yeah.
All right. So it was a lucky shirt. We'll go with that.
Yeah, it was a lucky shirt. And it worked out.
Okay. And then, Lee, if people are in your area, should they come and check out an escape room?
Yeah, absolutely. The best way to figure out where the three escape rooms that I own are is to go to hammerandwolf.com and come and play one of our rooms in Waco, Texas, Jackson, Tennessee, or Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Or just hit me up on social media and ask me. It's Lee Wolf Wilson. And I just love chatting about Hunted.
And what about Hilmar?
Man. I mean, this is partially why I got brought into this. Who knows where I am, man?
Yeah. Are you on Twitter?
Yeah, find me on Twitter. Find me on Instagram. I'll be in Jackson for right now. And then, you know, who knows what's next? I'm definitely going to go tarpon fishing soon. So that's about.
Okay. All right.
He's the modern nomad. So yeah. At Hilmar Skagfield is where to find him.
Yeah.
All right. Well, guys, thank you so much. And really appreciate you guys coming on with us. And thanks again for you guys were great sports about the whole podcast all season long. And I know for Kurt and Liana, we really do appreciate you guys listening the whole way through.
All right. We loved the time with you, and we love the podcast. Yeah. It was a ton of fun for us.
Tell Liana at Hill Bay says hey.
Okay. We will. All right. All right, guys, all the best, and hope to talk to you again down the road.
All right, brother.
Thanks, Rob.
All right, take care. All right, everybody, there you have it. Lee and Hilmar, really nice guys that they were corresponding with us all season long on Twitter with both myself and Kurt and Liana and so many of our listeners. So thanks so much to the Wolves for coming on to chat with us about Hunted. All right. So now let's switch gears. And I want to bring in a woman that spent 28 plus days tracking Lee and Hilmar across the southeastern United States. Of course, she is, in addition to being one of the hunters, she is the CEO of Fortalice Solutions, which is an industry-leading cybersecurity firm, an expert in all things cybersecurity, and also she was the first chief information officer at the White House under George W. Bush. Please welcome to the podcast, Teresa Payton. Teresa, how are you?
Hi, Rob. Doing great and big fan of yours. So really excited to be here talking with you.
Teresa, I'm very excited to talk to one of the people working to track down these teams on Hunted, because I think that it's really an interesting idea for a show. And I think that especially considering that you have all these real world credentials, you know, I'm really interested to know what the process was and even how you came to be one of the people looking for fictional criminals on a TV show.
Sure. Well, we'll start with the second part first. You know, it's one of those things I kind of call it a God thing. The producers were doing the talent calls and talking to people in law enforcement, military intelligence agencies, and a couple different people recommended us to the producers. And they started talking to us about potentially helping them set up the technology and securing the back office for the show, because we do that for companies and people for a living. And then asked a couple of us to audition to be on the show. And they happened to choose Charles DeBarber, Landon Stewart, and myself to be on the show. So just really an incredible honor and opportunity. And I can tell you this, Charles and Landon have never had 28 days of me straight. They were ready for vacation after the show.
And you had worked with them previously before being on Hunted with them?
Yeah, they work for my company. So we protect nations, business, and people. And in the people protection business, we use something called open source intelligence, and we manage the cyber footprint for different people. And it runs the gamut from people who are cyber stalking victims and revenge porn victims, all the way through athletes and politicians who just want to make sure their cyber footprint is as best and positive as possible to help them professionally. And Charles and Landon run a big piece of that portfolio, taking care of our individual clients at the company.
Well, Teresa, all of this stuff is so topical between everything that's going on in politics and all sorts of entertainment from shows like Mr. Robot, just completely in the zeitgeist right now. I was reading through your AMA from the last couple of days on Reddit, and I'll link to it in the post, but it's a real fascinating read to go through because while you talked about Hunted, it was a lot of talk about privacy concerns that people have.
It was. And, you know, it's interesting. I actually started receiving questions early. I logged in about 30 minutes early. I was raised by a Marine, and if you weren't at least 10 minutes early, you were considered late. So I logged in 30 minutes early just to make sure I was there and waiting for people. And then questions started coming in. So I answered a couple questions. The next thing I know, I'm answering a ton of questions. And then the 1 hour was up and the questions were still coming in. So I did the best I could. You'll see a ton of unanswered questions out there. And it literally was, we ran out of time. But you're right, Rob. People had questions running the gamut from, what do you know about the CIA data breach, saying that they have WikiLeaks, saying that they have these exploits that can make my TV spy on me? What do you know about that? To how did things work on behind the scenes on Hunted? You know, to how could I protect my own privacy? I had a couple offers for dates. That was interesting. And then, you know, just people asking questions about how can I get into this career field? What do you recommend I do? What programming languages would you recommend? So it was a really well-rounded group of people. You know, a few kind of interesting questions here and there that were kind of off topic, but almost everything was just a really fun discussion. And you're right. I mean, it wasn't just about Hunted. It was about, well, how can I personally protect my privacy or my loved one's privacy? So it's really good to see that awareness is coming out of, you know, kind of the show.
Yeah. And again, very interesting read, and I'll link to it if people want to check that out. So can you take us through the process of how the game ultimately worked? From what I understand, was everybody on the same timetable in terms of racing on or trying to evade you guys on Hunted, or was it more staggered like what we saw ultimately on the TV show?
Yeah, so roughly, now a couple of things too. A lot of people don't realize we were learning the fugitive side of the story with the rest of you at home watching on TV. We didn't know the fugitives in advance. We had nothing to do with picking the fugitives. Because people were asking me, what are you looking for in a fugitive? I'm like, people who run? I don't know. CBS did the casting. So that kind of is, you know, something I don't think a lot of people realize. And then secondly, they were all released roughly around the same time. You know, obviously we can only handle so much in the command center, but they were all released within roughly amount the same time, you know, over the course of hours. And so it wasn't like sort of this neat and orderly, you know, kind of production line of, okay, here's your first case, and now here's your second case, and here's your third one. And I think you guys talked about in your podcast about Sushi, like Sushi coming into the command center. It was much more like Lucy and Ethel and the Chocolate Factory when the conveyor belt sped up. It was more like that on most days. And so basically all we would get, which this is really interesting too, when I get a case from a client or a lawyer or a law enforcement asset to help out on a case, I usually get a lot more information than we got on the show. All we got on the show was, here's one picture. And I got to tell you, these are very attractive people, and these have to be the absolute worst pictures they've probably taken in their entire life. So one picture, and then first and last name, no relationship between the person they're running with. So you don't know if it's brother, sister, cousin, somebody to work with, some random person they grabbed at the grocery store. You have no idea. And then the last known address, and there's no context. So you take that address, you plug it in, and you say, okay, that looks like a grocery store or a car wash or some kid's school. Do they have kids? I don't know. You don't even have a social security number. If you go to the legal search records to look on a first and last name, and that's all you have, there's a lot of matches on those names. And you couldn't just say, well, the person who's nearest this last known address, we had no idea if they were from that area, vacationing, as you saw with the Kings. They weren't even from the area. They were vacationing. They were from North Carolina. So there was a lot of things that we had to kind of piece together on the fly that you usually actually have a more thorough fugitive package when you're assigned a real case.
Were you guys handicapped as hunters by the fact that you guys were not an actual law enforcement unit and just needed to rely on data that you could access as a public citizen?
So here's what they did for us in the command center, and I thought this made it incredibly genuine, and I hope it came across to you and everybody else at home. In the command center, they told us to treat everything like we would in the real world. We wrote subpoenas. We wrote out requests for investigation. I think you saw that one time where I was sitting there with Aki and I said, I'm going to ask for this, I'm going to ask for this, I'm going to ask for this. And if we didn't write the correct justification, there was a group of people that were former law enforcement and policy experts who would actually reject our requests. And then I don't know kind of what production did to make sure the data was or wasn't there. But for us in the command center, we operated as if it were a real investigation in the real world. So when we said, I want to find out if, we would actually look up and say, are there installed license plate readers on this Atlanta highway? Yes, there are. Okay, I want the information from these license plate readers. And then production figured out whether or not, one, it went to the judge and the judge said, yes, you have just cause. I will approve this warrant for license plate readers. And then two, if indeed the data did exist, we would have to wait the same amount of time you would in a law enforcement investigation before it would be returned to us. So they did the best they could to make it, you know, it is a game show, mm-hmm. but they did the best they could to make it mimic notionally the real world investigations.
So there were two teams that ultimately evaded you guys during their time on the run in Lee and Hilmar and English and Steven. Could you speak a little bit about each of those pairs and what they did right in your mind?
It hurts too much. Do I have to talk about it? I'm kidding. That's my competitive nature. My hat's off to them. My hat's off really to all of the fugitives. One, for standing up and having the guts to say, I want to do this. I want to compete and I'm going to do what it takes to stay off the grid. And, you know, none of these are people who are professionals at doing this. And so my hat's off to everybody. And if you made it a day, you know, against people like Lenny DePaul and Rifi and Andy and all the ground hunters like Buck and Griff and Amanda and Roxanne, all of the hunters, like if you made it a day, like that's saying something. These are trained professionals. Same thing on the intel side. So let's talk about the two teams and what they did right. When you think about the Kings, I mean, they were pitching tents in backyards. She was trying really hard not to talk to her kids and connect to the grid. She found strangers who actually wanted to sort of get themselves inserted into the process and help them out. And you saw that ruse in the parking lot where we were really thinking they were going to be there and they weren't there. Mm-hmm. So they did a lot of things right. They basically entrusted themselves to strangers and, you know, called home as little as possible. So to me, those are, you know, some of the things that they did that helped them stay off the grid. With Lee and Hilmar, there were a couple of times that, you know, they almost gave themselves away because they were really having fun being very good competitors. And again, both sets were great competitors. They had some great ideas at the beginning around sort of having this secret online, everybody log in and just leave a draft with very elaborate instructions. And we were able to tap in a little bit to that because of the mail cover that we had put in place. And, you know, they probably did not anticipate in this digital age that there's old school post office mail covers that still exist today.
Yeah.
They did a lot of things right too. They almost got themselves in trouble a couple times with the Craigslist taunt that gave us a little bit of information about them. And, you know, the plane flight was well over before, you know, we knew about it the next day. But that also gave us, you know, we had the tail number, we had the newspaper, we had a couple things to sort of give us at least a launch point by the time we found out about it. I think the other thing that you find, at least in the footage that was made available, both groups were very compatible. Not a lot of arguing. Somebody was kind of clearly the boss and calling the shots, but the other person was sort of the sanity sounding board. So they also chose their partner wisely. If you're going to go on the run with somebody for 28 days, it better be somebody that you're compatible with and you know how to ebb and flow through the stressful times.
Okay, don't worry. That, my wife and I are not considering applying for Hunted Season 2, Teresa.
Yeah, I mean, you notice Lee did not go with a family member. He went with a best buddy.
Yeah.
And you know, so sometimes that's the right recipe for success.
Teresa, do you feel like somebody with your experience, if you had to be a contestant on Hunted, do you think that it would be particularly easy for you, or even you would have difficulty evading the hunters?
You know, I could do it. I got to tell you, I know what's involved in going off the grid. And you know, unless there was a national security disaster going on and my country needed me to do it, I don't want to unplug from my kids. They're like at a great age right now. I wouldn't want to give up those 28 days with my kids. So I know what's required, and I absolutely would do it in service to my country. For me personally, I don't know if I would go unless I could figure out. Now, my kids are pretty savvy, so maybe if I could take the kids along, we go on a big adventure and we'd hide.
And if you were going to go on the run, which of the hunters would be the right person to team up with?
That's a tough one because we all get along so well, and everybody brings like this amazing, incredible background. I mean, that's a tough one. I mean, I couldn't just pick one. I really couldn't.
Obviously, that you guys had your own vantage point of what was going on during the game, and you didn't have a lot of information about what the hunted teams were doing. What was something that you saw the teams do that really surprised you in the actual episodes?
The fugitives or
yes.
The actual grounds hunters? The fugitives.
The fugitives.
Yeah, it was so interesting, for example, and again, I give the trans, two and center trans, a ton of credit. I mean, they made it halfway. And I remember when we thought we had a beat on where they were, I thought there is no way they're still in that parking lot. Like, I really thought that at that point they were going to be in the wind again, so it would be interviewing people. And so the fact that they were celebrating by having a burrito, you know, it was just kind of one of those lucky breaks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so to me, I mean, I think they did a lot of things right up until they got to that point. But you know what? You need to eat on the run. I mean, that's you're a fugitive. Like, you should always be looking over your shoulder and just assuming we're right around the corner.
So you suggest drive through.
Yeah, well, it's funny because they got somebody else to go through the drive through for them. And so I'm like, well, wait a minute, because I'm watching this all unfold, and I'm thinking, I know we caught them in that parking lot. So I'm watching them convince the guy to go through the drive-thru. I'm like, that's really smart. So why were they still there? And it was just they wanted to just take a breath. And I think, you know, that was kind of the classic mistake, is they got comfortable. And in that moment, they got comfortable. We got them.
Yeah.
So that surprised me. Troy and Shelly, okay. I tell you what, I got to give you like high fives multiple times to those two for living in the swamp and paddling past an alligator. I hate alligators. I hate mosquitoes. I used to live in Florida and I knew the area that they were in, and I thought they can't be spending all these days in the swamp. They've got to be getting out of the swamp and staying somewhere. And the fact that they were actually in the swamp that whole time up until we apprehended them, like, that surprised me. The boys, Arif and Ahmad, I knew it. I knew they had to be using encrypted channels. They were using Tor. They were using encrypted apps, because I was like, they're getting handed off somehow, and it's not just burner phones. So they've got to be using encrypted apps. So that was pretty interesting to see that unfold in the car, where they talked about we're going to be using encrypted apps. The fact that those two were doing manual labor while fasting during Ramadan, during that hot, humid weather, I had no idea what they were going through. So that really
that was impressive. Like, I don't think the show made a big enough deal about that they also were going through a fast at the time that they were hunted.
Yeah, I mean, I have a whole new level of respect for those two after watching like what they went through. Remember that one time he was like, I'm sorry, I got to break my fast. I thought, oh my gosh, is he going to eat barbecue? He took a sip of water. I'm like, oh, okay. Like, I'm waiting for him to sit down and have a full out Southern barbecue platter. And he took a few sips of water so he could sort of steady himself and get back to work. And I thought, oh my gosh. These guys really, they were impressive. They really did their homework. They really thought about this a lot. And, but yeah, that surprised me. I had no idea what those two went through to make it that far.
We saw a couple of times the hunters ended up, or you guys in the command center ended up taking over some of the fugitives' social media accounts. Was that, did you guys do that? But was that a hack of their social media accounts, or were you able to get access to those accounts or through the actual social media network?
It depended, and it depended on kind of what. So, for example, one of the rules is they had to leave their devices behind. Now, they could wipe the device if they wanted to. But as you've heard me say multiple times on the show, delete is never delete. There's always some kind of recover function. A lot of people backdate up to the cloud, so they reset their device. And it's just thinking, just being really creative and thinking about ways to tell the device, hey, just sync back up to the cloud, you know. The one you just talked to yesterday. Oh, look, all the data is back. That's so awesome. So some of it was just being understanding the enterprise architecture of how devices are interconnected and how they talk to the cloud and how they talk to devices. And then some of it was, now, just so you know, before we could guess passwords and break into accounts and things like that, we also had to write up justifications for that. And the justifications had to be approved before we were allowed to try to crack into. You saw Landon actually get into David's account. Yes, on the show. So even though fugitives signed whatever paperwork they signed saying, yeah, I'll leave my devices behind and whatever, we had to write, just as we would a police warrant in the real world, we had to write a justification of, I would like to break into this Facebook account, give me permission. And we would have to wait for the appropriate amount of time for someone to judge that we had just cause and that we met the spirit of the warrant, and then the proper amount of time for a fugitive being on the run for them to grant us, sure, you can try and get in. And so we followed, you know, it's a competition. People are competing for money. So they wanted to make sure things were as fair as possible for the people that were on the run. So we weren't allowed to just like break into stuff without going through a formal framework and process to do that.
Did you have to wear the same outfit for 28 days, Teresa?
Ha ha ha. I had multiple versions of the same outfit. And trust me, laundry and dry cleaning was done every day. And my understanding of it was that they felt like from an editing standpoint, they didn't want it to be too jarring for us to be in, you know, different outfits and things like that. So yes, we had multiple versions of the same outfit, and they went to the cleaners.
So you didn't pull a Hilmar?
No, I was not pulling a Hilmar. Yeah, I was like, wow, he did. Because every once in a while, we would get a digital breadcrumb on Lee and Hilmar. I'm like, wait a minute, wasn't he in that shirt last time, and the last time, and the last time? Like when we were getting surveillance footage, I'm like, Lee's changing it. I'm like, are they playing with us? What are they doing here? I thought he was like, I didn't know what was going on there. I thought he had multiple versions of the same shirt, but I guess it was a lucky shirt.
Yeah, it was a lucky shirt. So there were a few teams that we saw more of than others, and then other teams, and I guess that just depended on like who had the most exciting stuff going on. But of the teams that didn't make it, who came the closest in your mind to being able to pull the whole thing off?
You mean as far as who might have been the third couple to get away?
Was the team that was like one false move, if they didn't do one thing, that they probably would have gotten away from you guys?
I tell you, you know, I think Arif and Ahmad definitely rank up there in my mind. David and Emily rank up there as well. You know, the couple of phone calls. I mean, I knew Emily and her mother were so tight. And even with the calendar, Lenny and I would sit there in the mornings because we'd go over every single case. And I would do what was called huddles, where I would do a stand up with the intel group and have Lenny come over and the commander come over. And I'd say, okay, guys, we're going to walk through the top three things that didn't work yesterday on each one of the cases and one thing you're going to do differently today with the analyst, with Lenny, and with Robert over there. Because when you do something like that, you end up getting really good ideas come out of that, right? So I every morning I would say, can this calendar really be real? I mean, it just feels like old spy 101, like the oldest trick in the book. Write it down, rip the page, some people look at the indentation and they've thrown us off. So my focus was primarily on, once I read his book and tasked all the people that were in his book that were close to David and a part of his life was Emily and her mother's relationship. And so that really, some of those digital tracks were critical for us in tracking them down and narrowing them down. But Arif and Ahmad as well, I mean, they did an amazing job in being coordinated, kind of through the sisters network and getting around and doing the manual labor and being on the farm. So I think those two probably could have had a pretty good, you know, I sort of would put them in sort of a third and fourth tying for like a third place.
But no money for them.
No money for you. That's right.
Were there any real world tools that you felt like that you were a little handicapped in terms of not being able to use as part of the production team, that something that you would use in real life to track somebody?
You know, for the most part, they were pretty open-minded with the tools that are available to law enforcement and just making it fair and equitable and making sure we follow the framework and a process. For me, I think, one of the things, like, for example, the Facebook wanted posters, of course, we wanted those much sooner in the game. But, you know, in fairness, you know, to make sure like we exhausted all other opportunities. So the things that we came up with that were super creative, those took a lot longer to approve. And I don't feel like it was because they were trying to string us along or anything like that. I think they genuinely were trying to understand, like, what are you saying is possible and how would you do that? And trying to make sure it was equitable and fair and created, you know, sort of that there was a framework to follow to be able to do that. So for example, when we went and talked to try and get permissions to turn the boys' computers, Will and Miles, into slaves, mm-hmm. and basically have those go to the dating apps and make the dating apps convince the geography that Will and Miles were physically there, so people would see their wanted posters. I remember them saying, "Are you serious? Like, you can do that?" We're like, "Of course we can. We just need permission to do it." And so they would, you know, have to, these new and creative ideas, they had to spend a lot of time thinking about, you know, sort of the what's fair and equitable and can we sort of put it through almost like a warrant process and a framework to do that. So that was kind of a cool undertaking. You know, are there some other things that possibly we could have done as law enforcement? We were really trying to do some things with the telematics on the cars and the radios, but, you know, a lot of things, if we were told no, my belief is it was to make sure that everything was safe. That was stressed to us on a daily basis, that they wanted to make sure the fugitives and the hunters were safe and that innocent bystanders were safe. So, for example, when you see something like the highway scene, in some cases, law enforcement could have the opportunity to throw out stop sticks, you know, the sticks with nails on it, mm-hmm. Or to create some type of a blockade or to do something like that. And those types of things were not on the table because it was deemed potentially unsafe to innocent bystanders, the hunters and the fugitives. And I really applaud, candidly, CBS and Amal Shine for thinking through that in advance.
You mentioned the slave box to be able to hack Tinder. Was there anything else that was sort of an outside of the box idea that the command center team came up with that you were really impressed with?
I mean, the wanted posters was great. I mean, that was on social media because it was interesting. We did actually have people call into a tip line. So we had an old fashioned tip line and that was helpful. And, you know, my perspective was it's going to be more about how people comment and learning these new names. Like, wow, you seem really upset about this. I'm going to start tracking you. So I think, you know, those were some of the most creative ideas. But even as you saw the password duping, which is, you know, trying to figure out somebody's password and duping Google into thinking we were David. Mm-hmm. Well, David's on the run. Like, if you saw that group effort that went on there, like, well, what do you think his favorite sports team? And everybody's looking up pictures of David at sporting events and trying to guess, like, which jersey did he wear the most? I think it's so hard to pin down the list because every day the best and the brightest came in, they would say, you may start hunting now. And like just the creative juices and the competitive nature and the, we got to get all these people off the street would kick in, and just amazing, you know, really good ideas. And some of them small and didn't even make it to TV. And then some of the bigger ones that you saw.
Teresa, how interested would you be to come back for a Hunted season two? Is it something that was just like, okay, this was fun, but I need to get back to, you know, looking for the real bad guys, or you're all in?
I'm all in. For me, there were a couple really cool things that happened during the show. And one was the families who wrote me and said, you know, my kids never listen to me. I told them delete's never delete. I told them be careful what you put on social media. And now I get to watch a wonderful show, people really good at their tradecraft, people trying to hide. And I get to say, I told you so. And my kids are entertained and we're getting a chance to have that conversation. And so that was one really kind of cool thing to hear from families. And the second one was, and I talked to Mr. Geller, that I was hoping people would be entertained, engaged, but also a little enraged when they realized, like, privacy, how much of our privacy we've given up in the name of proactive and reactive surveillance. And the second thing I told Mr. Geller was, is that in our people protection business, we oftentimes have victims find us and they have no hope. I mean, they're kind of just incredibly depressed, distraught. They don't think anybody's going to be able to prove the person who's doing these horrible things to them on the internet, whether they're being cyberstalked or a victim of revenge porn or a victim of reputation defamation. And they don't think anybody's going to believe them. Police, law enforcement is too strapped to handle them. And they're at their end of the rope when they come and find us. And we're able to give them their lives back. There's no silver bullet. It takes us time. And I told Mr. Geller, like, some of these people have thought about committing suicide. I mean, they really, really are down. And they just happened to find us by telling people, I need help. And somebody knows somebody who knows us. And I told Mr. Geller that if his show did anything but give some of these people who have anonymous aggressors doing bad things on the internet, I hope it will give them the hope that they need to sort of stand up, chin up, and know that there's people out there who can help them, and that the person who's trying to be anonymous and do these bad things, that they can be uncloaked.
Well, Teresa, thank you for coming on with us. Though I think you know this, we all really enjoyed the show, and it was very fun because I thought that all of the teams that listened to the podcast were all really great, and then everybody in the command center on the law enforcement side of things, you guys were all really fun to interact with on social media. So thank you guys all very much for that. We're hoping that there is more Hunted to talk about in the future. And of course, if you want to follow Teresa on Twitter, she's at Tracker Payton. That's Tracker, PAYTON. Anything else that you want to let the listeners know about?
Rob, first of all, thanks for having me on. And like I said, we were all huge fans of yours on the show. We loved listening to Rob Has a Podcast. And, I agree with you. I hope that there's a season 10 and maybe we'll have some fun with it. Maybe sometime the fugitives will hunt the hunters and maybe we'll have a best of Hunted, like the top three teams that got away or something like that. And I just hope that people will continue to talk about the show, love the show. By the way, Rob, if you do want to go on the run, you've got to get your submission in huntedcasting.com, and CBS
also
has.
But people should send in an application and go to huntedcasting.com. But I like the grid. I want to stay on the grid.
Okay. Well, if you want to stay on the grid, you shouldn't go on the run because it doesn't work. It doesn't work.
Teresa, next time I'm being cyberbullied by these egg people, can I give you a call?
You betcha. I got it. I got your back.
Thank you. They're relentless, the egg people. No, but in all seriousness, thank you so much. And again, this stuff is so topical. And I have a feeling that, you know, as each year goes by, it's only going to be more and more topical. So I think that Hunted is the right show at the right time for everything that's going on the internet. So thank you again so much. And Teresa, all the best, okay?
All right, take care. Fingers crossed for season two.
We'll keep them crossed. And give my best to Commander Clark.
Will do.
All All right, thank you. All right, everybody, there you have it. Teresa Payton on our Hunted and Hunters edition of the podcast. Lots of fun catching up. Really enjoyed the Hunted. I know a lot of our listeners did, as well as the podcast coverage that we did in the Survivor offseason. So very fun. Do hope that we get a Hunted season two along the way. All right, so that's going to do it for us here today. Also, in addition to this podcast, we have our News AF podcast going up in between now and the next Survivor episode. So check out all of that. Plus, if you missed it over the weekend, we started our own Survivor March Madness bracket. You can, of course, see that podcast up on robhasawebsite.com. And of course, a extra big thanks to all of our listeners that have been using our links for amazon.com. We always appreciate it. It definitely helps out the show when you start your Amazon shopping with our link, robhasawebsite.com/Amazon. Thanks so much to all of our listeners. And of course, in Canada, you can use the link robhasawebsite.com/AmazonCA. I hope you enjoyed our Hunted and Hunters edition of the podcast. Hope you can join us for Survivor Know-It-Alls after the next episode of Survivor. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.